Thanks for tuning into WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron, co-host of Studio 2, and this is a Studio 2 Extra. What does it mean to be fat? Not overweight, not obese, not big-boned, fat. That question ripples through a new collection by Philadelphia author Emma Copley Eisenberg. She won acclaim and lots of readers with her 2024 novel Housemates. Her latest, out this month, is called Fat Swim. It's 10 short stories woven together by common characters and themes. Those themes include queerness, sex, and the wonders and burdens of the human body. Eisenberg believes exploration of the body often takes a backseat to exploration of the mind in literary fiction. She wanted to challenge that, partly by using the word fat instead of its frequent substitutes, and starting with the very first words. So the book's called Fat Swim.
Yeah.
I think fat is the fourth word in the book.
good counting, yeah.
So why? Why is that word so prominent, so central in this work?
I mean, this book is really, to me, united by like an exploration of the question of what it means to be a human being with a body. So it is interested for sure, particularly in this like gap, I think, between the way the world perceives bodies, women, queer people, and fat people in particular. Those are the things that I'm interested in because those are, you know, my identities in the world. But I'm really, I think that anyone hopefully could relate to the questions that are in the book of, you know, am I my mind or my body or both? Is the me-ness that is me, does it live in both places? Or do I control one more versus the other? Does the body know things that the mind can't? Like, we get all these messages all the time, and there's so many theories, but no one really knows what is true about, like, where our selfness, like, lives. And so I think fatness and being, a fat person, which to me I use that word as, like, a neutral descriptor of size, in line with, like, I would call, like, a body neutrality movement or a body liberation movement, that to me is a word that just describes a lot of people in America these days and describes me and many people I know. So, you know, more than half of Americans are now considered like medically quote unquote fat, which I use to include like the words obese or overweight. Even though I think those are not very useful terms mostly.
Let me ask you about that. Mm-hmm. Why are words like obese and overweight not as useful to you as a writer compared to the word fat?
Well, they're all adjectives, but I think that, overweight and obese are adjectives that are much, much more loaded, and they're loaded with baggage around mainly medicine. They come from the medical field, which has to do with health, right? And it's really interesting because people, I think, start to use overweight. They think it's like a nice way to say fat or something.
Right.
Which always like cracks me up because I'm like, over what weight? Like over whose weight, you know? Whereas fat is just like a descriptor of being a large person, a wide person, like being a tall person or a blonde person. So I find fat to be a much, on a craft level as a writer, I find it to be a much more useful word because it's visual. It's visual rather than medical, or visual rather than judgmental. And I'm really...
You think fat is less judgmental than those words?
I do. I know that a lot of people in the world don't feel that way, so I completely acknowledge that. I do think that's changing to some extent with the movement sort of more towards body neutrality, which to me just means like every person has a body, everybody deserves dignity and respect. But I think that the way that the word fat has been stigmatized has flowed from so much hate and so much just shame around body size in America and, you know, throughout the world, really. But like there's a sense that I think in America that we have this puritanical history,
right,
that really, really connects fatness to stupidity, to laziness, to moral failing.
Right.
And I think to me, obesity and obese and overweight are much more connected to moral and health judgments, whereas fat to me is a word that's actually now been like reclaimed by a social movement that I'm you know, tangentially a part of. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask if yeah. there's an attempt here to reclaim the word fat to destigmatize it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's interesting. So I write nonfiction and I write fiction. I'm primarily a fiction writer these days and I'm trained as a fiction writer, but my first book was nonfiction. I write a Substack on that is nonfiction. That's sort of my, like, you know, a glorified blog essentially. But so when in my nonfiction, I'm really participating in these sort of activist ways of thinking about the word fat. But in my fiction, I'm just playing. I'm just describing. I'm just trying to render the world as it is. So I don't see my fiction as having any argument or any agenda so much. But when I'm participating in like a discourse or a conversation with people in life as Emma, I do have my opinions. But my characters are all, I think, grappling with that very question. Like, do I know how to think about my body in a way that is not shameful? Or like, I would love to see my body in ways that are expansive and rich and pleasurable, but I also feel bad and gross and scared. And I'm really interested in the ways that people behave one way, maybe in public, but think another way in private, and kind of what happens when who you are in public and who you are in private don't agree. And all the characters in this book, you know, as they wander around Philadelphia and make some good and bad choices, are all like grappling with that question, I think. Mm. Yeah.
In the first story and the last story, characters are swimming. They're in the water. And there's like commentary about how a body feels in the water. What about that image like really connected with you? Bodies and water.
Darn. I'm like, it's such a gorgeous day out today. I wish I were swimming. Like, I just, there's something personally for me. And, you know, yeah, this book is full of experiences that I've had and experiences that I've imagined. So some great stew. Again, that's the glory of fiction. But like, I think there is something for me and a lot of people where being in the water is one of the few places where we feel in tune with our bodies and just pleasurable in our physicality. Like, I just, for a lot of people, like, a lot of us are in pain. A lot of us have, you know, chronic illness. A lot of us have joint issues. Like, when you're in the water, it's just like so glorious. Like, you just feel like an animal, I think. Like a sort of like...
a little less gravity.
Yeah. Yeah, you feel supported, but in a way that feels light, I think. And it's just, it's delight. It's like totally delightful. And so I think I think that the title story, Fat Swim, and then maybe thinking about why the whole book is called that is really just this idea of like, it's a very odd temporary experience for humans to be in water. We don't live there. We can't survive there, but we love it and we delight in it. And many of us, not all of us, some people are scared of the ocean, understandably, but I think there's just this sense of play and joy and being a creature that has a physical body outside of its mind that is exciting to me. And I don't see enough in fiction, I think. Hmm. Yeah.
You're writing about body and body image in an era of Ozempic, GLP-1s. I think that only comes up at the very, very end when there's this pivot. And I don't want to talk about the pivot so much, but why didn't you want to write more about that specifically, given just how prevalent it is in the news and in culture right now?
I mean, it's so true. I can barely watch TV without being bombarded with ads for GLP-1s.
Constant.
I think there have always been these trends. You know, before GLP-1, there was Fen-Phen. And before that, there was, you know, speed, basically. Like, I don't equate those drugs. Lots of people take GLP-1s in ways that are really needed and important and helpful for them. But at the same time, I think there's always been a medicalized weight loss industry for profit that is constantly present in our lives. And this is, to me, just kind of the latest wave. So I think I didn't want to give it too much power. Mm. And I didn't want to...
So it's like purposely kind of left out of the book or carved out of it.
A little. And I think there's also just a sense that, like, there, again, it's a bind. There's no way to relate to GLP-1s in a perfect way. Like, it, you know, just open Substack and read 10 different think pieces by 10 really smart people. Everyone has a different way. Their body's going to react differently to it and they're going to feel differently about it. And so to me, I think it wasn't so much about, again, taking a stance on any current issue as more showing lots of different characters grappling with the issues underneath that question of GLP-1s, which is just, how do I think about my body? How do I relate to it? Also, GLP-1s dull pleasure, and some people say dull sexual experience as well. And so sex and food are really interlinked in the book. And I wanted to show characters having you know, pleasurable experiences, and then also deciding like maybe that's too much, or I don't know how to seek like that feeling in a way that feels healthy and responsible for me. And I don't think any drug can fix that. That's been a human issue since the dawn of time. Yeah.
Speaking of things that are clearly like reverberating through culture and news right now, there's obviously a huge anti-trans political movement right now. There are trans characters in this book, and yet I don't recall many moments where it's like sort of like overtly addressed, or like those two things come into conflict with each other. Did you think about putting that in more or less? How did you want to deal with that, given that, you know, there's obviously a vibration happening right now in the culture, in the political culture around that issue?
I think for me, I do, again, in my, as Emma, as in my nonfiction, I am out there, you know, being vocal, talking about ways to protect the trans community. I think in the fiction, I really just wanted to focus on human experiences. And so I got really interested in, yeah, I think there's like three central trans characters in the stories. One who is the point of view character, and then two who appear in other stories. And yeah, I mean, for me, like living in Philly, we're extremely queer and trans city, sanctuary city, which I love. You know, there's just the my community and the people that I come in contact with. We are queer, we are trans, and we are fat. And again, that's most of why those folks end up in the book, is just to render reality, just to render, you know, that folks are here, they're thriving, they're living, making, you know, fun choices, challenging choices. I wanted to show people in their full humanity.
The Philliness of this book is pretty extreme. I think Philadelphia appears in every single short story at some point.
Yeah.
They're not all set in Philadelphia, but like there's a Philadelphia connection somewhere.
For sure.
Why? why center Philadelphia?
Why not? I think so. I think that is part of what links the book all together, is that the characters are crisscrossing the city, the state, Jersey Shore. Everyone sort of knows each other. A couple of people date the same person accidentally, you know. And I think that's, again, just sort of true to my experience of being in Philly, that we're an extremely like interconnected city where you just sort of bop into people and run into people that you forgot about, that you know, that you are annoyed by, that your friend used to date. Like, that's just how my life is unfolded here in the
city. But there was never a thought like, I'll just set one of these stories in California, just throw one in there. Like, it was always going to be somehow in this web of Philadelphia.
Yes, I think there's something I was trying to solve, and that I was in conversation with, about Philly as a physical city. Like, we're extremely, I think we are an extremely embodied city. People are always yelling. People are always sitting on their stoops. People are always, you know, putting decorations up, and then it touches your house and you have to go talk to your neighbor about their weird decoration, and then they have to take sure. it down or not or whatever. Like, row homes, we're touching each other all the time. So I think there's something inspiring to me about Philly as a very touch and very sensory and very, like, just extra body, extra loud city that feels, I couldn't have said it in any other place.
Cycling back to where we started, talking about word choice, there was something that struck me in one of the stories where a character is told she has big bones, and then she's like, that's obviously not true. And kind of like reacting against the use of a euphemism. I guess as a writer, how do you treat like euphemistic language? Like, is it something that's fun to play with? Is it something that's fun to kind of like kick?
Yeah, it is fun to kick. I think I teach classes now about sort of writing. I mean, we often call it like the fat body or the non-normative body, even though that's sort of an academic word. Like, this idea of like, because again, like, fat people and disabled people in America were actually not the minority. Like, the majority of Americans are fat, which is why it's like so interesting to me that so little literary fiction includes fat characters, especially fat main characters. But that's a whole other thing. I teach classes now about like thinking about how to describe people accurately, like how to help a reader see someone,
right,
is really hard, and is actually a lot more work than just saying like, oh, they're overweight or something, right? So
those words restrict the reader from seeing the person, is what you're
correct.
Saying.
Correct. Yes. I think they do, and they also are lazy craft. I think a lot of writers are really lazy in the way they describe bodies. I read so much literary fiction, often like prize winning or best selling, where I'm like, I don't know anything about what this character looks like. Like, they tell me their weight as a number.
But why do you think authors who are like that part of their job is to like make you see the scene in their head, why do they shy away from that sort of like direct to the source language, things that can be so clarifying? Like, what are they afraid of, I guess, maybe is the question.
I mean, I think it does come back sometimes to this idea that, like, the body is gauche. Award-winning literary fiction should not care about the body. It's about the mind. It's about the intellect, right? And that only romance novels or thrillers should care about the body. And I'm like, again, I just don't think that makes sense and is not true.
Yeah. High art, high fiction is not about bodies.
Supposedly, yeah. And that's never made sense to me. So, yeah, all the time writers use, they'll put in a number for weight. They'll say overweight. They'll say ugly. Those are adjectives. That doesn't mean anything to me. Like, your ugly is not the same as my ugly.
Right, totally subjective.
So it just doesn't make sense. And I think I want a lot of writers to do better to actually help me see the people that they're describing. Otherwise, like, what are we doing here?
That was author Emma Copley Eisenberg. Her latest work is Fat Swim, a collection of interwoven short stories. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, and this has been a Studio 2 Extra. Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder and Hazel May Bryan. Al Banks engineered this podcast episode. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, and thanks for joining me.